This is The Allusionist, in which I, Helen Zaltzman, am Tippi Hedren in the birds, and language is the birds in the birds.
Ow, 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 get off me, ow, ow.
Coming up in today's show...
We're all experts, and all idiots at the same time.
On with the show.
Actually, the forecast is secret. Here you go, I'm telling you. Don't tell anyone.
Can't promise. All right.
Partly cloudy chance of a shower gets you out of a world of hurt. Don't tell anyone.
Unless you're forecasting for a desert area, in which case chance of a shower would be like a news story.
Well, true. But if you say a chance, you're not promising too much, are you? But no, the thing is, though, a chance of a shower actually has meaning for a meteorologist. 30%, 40%, 50% chance of a shower. That is a meaningful thing. I mean, here we're predicting the future. And also, you're forecasting for a given area over a given time period. I don't know where you're about to be in 20 minutes' time. I don't know if it is going to rain where you are, where you're going to be, but I know the area that you might be in if you're hanging out in Melbourne for the day. And I can tell you that about half of Melbourne is going to experience a shower at some point during the day today. So if I say a 50% chance of a shower, that means there's a good chance that 50% of this area that I'm forecasting for will see some wet weather.
Nate Byrne is a science communicator and meteorologist, and he presents the weather on Australia's national TV breakfast show, ABC News Breakfast.
Then the cyclone watch continues down to St. Lawrence, so that's for gales 24 to 48 hours from now. So we've also got widespread flood watch that's extending from Rolling Stone all the way down to St. Lawrence.
In doing this, Nate has to convert the science of weather into words that people who have just woken up can understand and translate into their everyday experience. Oh, and he also has to cover the whole of Australia, a country that is also a continent, with climates ranging from tropical to desert to temperate. I'm currently in Tasmania, and it snowed yesterday morning, but that is not representative of the whole nation.
Today, for example, I've got maximum temperatures down at 12 degrees for one end of the country where it's raining and miserable and the wind is blowing a gale, literally blowing a gale. That has meaning, that word.
Gale, noun. Strong sustained winds with a speed of 32 to 63 miles per hour.
Whereas on the other side of the country, it's bright blue sunshine, 31 degrees, and it's not going to rain for the next 6 months. And we know that. In fact, the weather's going to be sunny in 31 for at least the next 5 months. So it makes it very, very difficult when you're trying to figure out what's going on for such a huge chunk of the world and only have 90 seconds to talk about it. That's the bigger problem, really.
It's also highly subjective. One person's light shower could be another person's deluge.
One of the worst ones for that, when the forecast says fine, that has a real meaning.
It means has two real meanings.
Well, in terms of the weather, yeah, it means there's no rainfall. Yeah. But it doesn't actually have any emotion attached to it from a forecaster's point of view. But for people, a fine day really, really does have a lot of meaning. I always find that one trips people up because I say it'll be fine in Melbourne and then somebody sends me a photo of some clouds. They're like, oh, it's a horrible, gloomy day. What are you talking about? Fine.
Oh. Could you say, I meant it'll be fine. It'll be okay.
Yeah. It'll just be fine.
B minus.
At best. Yeah.
It's a gripe of mine, actually, weather forecasters interpreting the weather through emotions. In Britain, weather forecasters are often saying things like, it'll be a good day tomorrow, hot and sunny. That's not good as far as I'm concerned. I love glowering skies, a sharp edge to the air, the sound of rain on the roof. I do not love sunburn or the sweaty smells on the crowded trains. And I appreciate it's nuanced what weather is good and why and for whom. Which is why I just want the weather forecasters to warn me that it's going to be hot and sunny and not to tell me how I feel about it.
One of the things I find really strange when it comes to the weather is that we're all experts and all idiots at the same time.
You're like, supposed to be the expert, though.
All right, yeah. But I mean, you know, we all live in it every day and we all feel like we understand the weather really well and we hear weather reports every single day. Now, if you are practicing a skill every day, well, on average, you're generally excellent at it, right? That's a real strength of yours. But it turns out that meteorologists typically haven't been very good at telling people what it is they're trying to tell them. So showers, just for example, means the rain's going to start and stop and start and stop. It doesn't tell you anything about the volume. Rain means it's just going to be continuous, and again, doesn't tell you anything about the volume. But we have built somehow cultural expectations and understandings that go with those words that the scientists don't actually mean when they're using those words. And it makes it a really tricky job.
So that's an interesting disconnect that you have to deal with. How do you even start to deal with that?
Well, I add extra words like light and heavy, and I often try to add to the forecast rather than just say, oh, wet weather for you. You know, it's umbrella weather, or, oh, don't worry about it, just a sprinkle. Stuff that the meteorologist would cringe at because that's not correct terminology.
It's not scientific.
Exactly, but you have to walk away from that when you're trying to communicate something with real meaning to people who don't have that training.
You are a scientist, but you're in an entertainment format.
Yeah, it took me a while to learn how to walk away from the science terminology because we are so heavily trained. And even as a trained science communicator, where, you know, you're told very clearly no jargon, and especially when it comes to the weather, it doesn't sound like jargon, showers and rain, because we hear those words every day. It doesn't sound like jargon, but in fact, they are absolutely meaning-laden terms when it comes to the science side of things. And it took me quite a while to step back from being a meteorological purist when it comes to the science side of things, to try to get across the meaning rather than being super precise. And trying to have an understanding of where people are and what their lives might look like. For example, if I say, good thing the rain's going to stop in a city like Melbourne, that's fine, wonderful. If I say, good thing the rain's going to stop in the middle of New South Wales, where we've got a drought at the moment, it's been 2 years since they've had any decent rain, that has very different meaning for those people.
When seeking terms that are quantifiable and expressive, Nate loves the words to describe wind.
Because that comes from naval or a seafaring background. We still use all of those terms, right? The wind is fresh or strong or gale force. I like that because those words do have meaning, much more than category 1, 2, 3, or 4.
We can interpret fresh or strong fairly proficiently. Fresh, we'll feel it. Strong, certainly not weak. Gale force, covered that earlier, but to recap, 34 to 47 knots, 8 to 9 on the Beaufort scale. But we meteorological laypeople don't necessarily know how fast a knot is, or whether a number on a scale means a lot or a little of that kind of weather. Is the weather counting down the top 10 to number 1, or turning it up to 11? And how do we relate these numbers to our prior wind experience? Because when it matters, it really matters.
One thing we always have a problem with in Australia is cyclone season. You know, a large part of our country is put into very real danger every year when cyclones approach. The categorisation system we use for tropical cyclones puts a number next to them. People that have lived through a cyclone making landfall near them often rate their experience very closely with the number of the category of the cyclone. And so a category 1 cyclone for some people, oh, it's nothing to worry about. Category 2, it's just a bit blowy. As somebody who's trying to communicate to people the real danger, you need to be very objective and be able to say to them, this is exactly what's going to happen. But then in order to sometimes make people actually do something, you have to also balance that with a little bit of emotional talk and impress on them how dangerous this actually could be, potentially, because otherwise big tough Aussies, you know, say, ah, oh, well, they have cyclone parties.
Oh.
They have friends around and have beers for the eye wall coming through.
Wow.
Yeah.
What a way to die.
yeah. Luckily, we tend to warn early and well, and for the most part, you know, we manage to get away with it when it comes to cyclones because, well, you know, large parts of our country don't have very many people in them, for one. And also, we tend to be really well prepared and get people there as quickly as possible. Plus, you know, if you're having a cyclone party, you've got friends around to help.
I guess, to dig you out of rubble and stuff. Mm. Do you have to word it very tactfully to make people apprehensive of danger but not add to panic.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's the other thing you really want to avoid doing is overstating what's going to happen. Because if you say something big is going to happen, people prepare for it, and then nothing does happen, then you've done a world of damage because they won't necessarily listen next time. But then equally, one of the things that I find most challenging is when we say, hey, there's going to be some really big floodwaters, for example, make sure you prepare yourself. And the town, you know, sandbags and makes all the preparations. The system comes through, the flood happens, but because they've prepared so well, they're unaffected, which is exactly what you want. And then afterwards, you see a lot of commentary of, oh, well, it wasn't even anything. Like, what? Why did we bother? Well, no. You bothered, which meant it wasn't anything. That was a good thing.
Like, everything works.
Yeah, that's how it should be. You know, if you prepare properly, chances are you can get away with your life. If you hadn't prepared, then things could be very, very different. But that can lead to its own level of complacency because people haven't firsthand experienced the danger, you know, because they've been so well prepared. It's a very funny thing.
So this is a reason that instead of numbers, weather forecasters opt for vocabulary that prods us in the emotions, tweaks our memories, provokes our senses, not just in emergencies. Australia's Bureau of Meteorology, which guides the weather forecasting in that country, has approved a term that Nate particularly enjoys.
I found it so evocative. I loved it. Sultry.
Oh.
Oh.
Is that for when the weather's like a bit close and sticky?
You know exactly what it is.
Do.
It means so much, doesn't it? Just automatically. It's kind of, you're a little bit bothered and just a little...
You can't quite get your layering right.
Yeah, perfect. But it's a legitimate forecast term. It's just not one that's used very often. Because these days, we tend to say humid, right?
Right.
Or something similar. Like, there are other ways of doing it. But that word to describe the weather is, and strictly also a human emotion,
perfect. It's quite a sexy weather term compared to humidity, which is not...
Yeah. And you wouldn't want to say it's a bit moist, would you?
Everyone hates the word moist.
I know. What's wrong with it? I don't understand.
Yeah, but then you've got a weather perspective on it, so you've managed to contain it.
What are your favourite weathery words, Nate?
I like the names of clouds. I don't use them as much as I would like to. I shouldn't use the names of clouds at all because they're not really that useful to most people. But, yeah, everybody loves a good cumulonimbus. You know, mammatus and... which is actually one of my favourite types of cloud.
What does it do?
Well, I think you can probably sense the root of the word there.
Mammaries. Did you all get that? It's mammaries.
Mammatus. It has long pendulous lobes that hang from underneath the cloud, affectionately known in some circles as the boob cloud. Because it's like a cow's udder, right? Very, very spectacular. You'll know it if you see it. The use of Latin in the naming of the clouds is just, I love it. And there isn't much of an alternative because...
Well, boob cloud.
Well, yeah, okay. Which is why we go mammatus. It's exactly why that word's there.
We're familiar with the tactic to make something sound classy and official, say it in Latin. But don't pretend that you didn't just say boobs in Latin. I'll just preemptively answer your intelligent ponderings about whether the word meteorology is related to the word meteor. The answer is yes. Well done. Meteor has been used since at least the 1590s to mean something streaking through the Earth's atmosphere. Before that, it was more general, a thing up in the air. So meteorology is the study of things high up. The Christmas decorations in the attic, the ice cream maker on top of the fridge, the magazines on the top shelf. No! Celestial conditions, cheeky. Get your head out of the boob clouds. Your randomly selected word from the dictionary today is nyctophobia, noun, extreme or irrational fear of the night or of darkness. Try using it in an email today. This episode was produced by me, Helen Zaltzman, and Martin Austwick, who makes all of the music you hear in the show. Big thanks to Nate Byrne, who is the weather presenter on ABC News Breakfast in Australia. So, if you see him on your TV warning you of a possible cyclone in your neighbourhood, do take appropriate precautions. Don't just think, ah, he's got such a cheerful face, it'll all probably be fine. Fine as in alright, or as in untumultuous weather, at least put away the patio umbrella in the shed. You can find me on Facebook and Twitter. Allusionist Show is the handle. And you can see the dictionary entries for the words of the day. You can find out more about every topic. You can read episode transcripts and more at the show's home, theallusionist.org.